Welcome back, True Crime Army. I am your host, Margot, and this is Military Murder, a show where I focus on crimes committed by military members and veterans. But don't worry, you don't have to know anything about the military to listen, I promise. You just have to be a true crime enthusiast, and if that's you, welcome home. Today's case is one that has haunted me for a very long time, and in fact, my first Instagram story where I showed my face was about Amanda Gonzalez, a young Latina soldier who was murdered in 2001 and whose case remained cold for over two decades. At the time when I was thinking about her case, I wondered how the Army couldn't know who killed her. But you know what? Shame on me, because the Army and the FBI have had Amanda on their mind this entire time, and they've had a suspect in mind as well. But the evidence just wasn't there, until DNA technology became so refined that they were able to pinpoint Amanda's DNA on the sleeve of the suspected perpetrator's sweater. Amanda's case has been recommended to me several times throughout the years, but in 2023, when someone was charged with Amanda's murder, I started to follow the case filings closely. And this year, the perpetrator is supposed to go to trial. In fact, as of this recording, the trial is scheduled to begin on April 8th, 2024. Join me today as I tell you about the tragic death of Private First Class Amanda Gonzalez and her unborn baby. Now, let's dig in.
Military Murder is an independent project and is not endorsed by the Department of Defense or any military component. The views expressed are those of the host. The content of this podcast is not meant to be legal or medical advice. Warning, this episode contains graphic details of murder and is not suitable for young listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
This is another decades-old case that comes with another heads up that you'll hear names of bases that are either no longer in existence or have had a name change. On Friday, November 2, 2001, a room on the third floor in Barracks Building 1326 at Fliegerhorst Kaserne, also known as Hanau Army Airfield in Germany, was popping. A good old barracks party was underway. The soldier assigned to the room, identified as SH in the court document that I relied on for this episode, left the door open so people could just come in and out as they pleased. I'm going to give SH the pseudonym of Sean. At around 10 p.m., partygoers saw Sean's neighbor, 19-year-old Private Amanda Gonzalez, walking to the bathroom, which was on a completely different floor. Amanda was friends with Sean because he had a popcorn machine in his room, and she had been there to use it just the last week or so. But she probably wasn't in the mood to party because she couldn't drink. You see, Amanda was 4.5 months pregnant with her first baby, a girl that was due on March 26, 2002. Friday night shenanigans finally calmed down in the barracks, and everything grew quiet. The following day, Saturday, November 3rd, Amanda's friends tried to call her, but no one was able to get a hold of her over the phone. Several of them went by her room and knocked on the barracks door, but it was all quiet inside and Amanda didn't answer the door. Well, Monday, November 5th came around and Amanda failed to show up to work at the dining facility for her shift as a cook. Amanda had been assigned as a food service specialist with the 1st Armored Division's 127th Aviation Support Battalion since January of 2001. Worried about where their soldier was, Amanda's leadership, a sergeant and a captain, went by her barracks room at about 2:30 p.m. to check on her. After gaining entry, they found Amanda lying on her back on the floor of her room. Some reports said that they broke down the door, but I'm fairly sure that they would have had a CQ or change of quarters NCO on duty, and that person probably had the master key. At any rate, Amanda was unresponsive and naked except for her bra and a white t-shirt. A pair of BDU pants were wrapped around her neck. First responders were called and attached an EKG to Amanda to see if there was any measurable heart activity. Sadly, 19-year-old Private First Class Amanda Gonzalez was deceased. Her body told the horrifying story of her violent death. She had contusions and bruises on her face and body, and it was evident that she had been strangled and beaten. Amanda was the victim of homicide. Army Criminal Investigative Division, or CID, in coordination with Hanau German Criminal Police, began an investigation into Amanda's murder. Her wall locker was found to be in total disarray and her keys were missing from her room. An autopsy determined that the cause of death was asphyxiation, with strangulation being a major component. They were not able to rule out concurrent smothering and noted that blunt force trauma to her head could have also been a contributing factor to her death. The autopsy report noted injuries that suggested recent forceful intercourse. Her date of death was listed as November 5th, 2001, the day her body was found. During their search of the crime scene, CID found a notebook belonging to Amanda, and in it she had written out various baby names. The baby names were written with two different last names, Wilkerson and Johnson. As CID dug into the case, they discovered that prior to her murder, Amanda was unsure who the father of her unborn baby was. The last names that she had used with the first name were of two soldiers who could potentially be the baby's father. Meanwhile, Amanda was laid to rest in San Jose Cemetery in her hometown of Hearn, Texas on November 17, 2001. She was laid to rest following services at St. Mary's Catholic Church. Amanda's funeral was co-led by Reverend Scott Michelson of St. Mary's, which was Amanda's childhood parish, and Reverend Ferdinand Madu, who was a chaplain from nearby Fort Hood. At her gravesite, below the traditional white marble headstone provided by the government for military members and veterans, is a marker placed by her family. There's a picture of Amanda in her blue graduation gown, and the dates of her life are marked with, quote, sunrise, December 8, 1981, sunset, November 5, 2001, end quote. The picture of her marker shows trinkets adorning her grave of the Eiffel Tower, American flags, and various birds, and a small bear statue holding a flag. The marker also contains an engraving that reads, quote, daughter, it seems like yesterday I tucked you in at night, whispering a prayer of thanks for another day of having you in my life. Not so long ago, we were putting your baby teeth out for the tooth fairy and reading storybooks until you fell asleep in her arms. It felt as though you grew overnight into a beautiful young lady. Today, daughter, I see you reaching out to people, showing that one person can make a difference in this world. And what a difference you've made. I know our life could never have been so full and complete without you being such an important part of it. I've watched the difference you've made in the lives of others as well. You had a very special gift that inspires people to be the best they can be. I'm so proud of all that you have done and hope you'll never forget that. We love you with all our hearts, end quote. Another engraving at her site read, quote, in memory of my baby, Alyssa Marie Gonzalez, end quote. And it also had an engraving of a lamb below it that I believe must be Amanda's unborn baby. Amanda was remembered by her high school principal, John DeBrock, as being a good student. He told the Bryan College Station Eagle that she had decided to join the Army during her junior year of high school. DeBrock was quoted as saying, quote, she was very steadfast. She was friendly to everyone. He also told the paper that Amanda was active on the Student Council and in the Future Homemakers of America. Amanda graduated from Madisonville High School in 2000 and joined the Army 3 months later. It had been a surprise to the family that Amanda made the decision to join the Army. She had shown up at her house one day with a recruiter in tow to announce to her family her plans. As it is with a lot of recruits, Amanda wanted to get the GI Bill to pay for college, and she had a long-term goal of becoming a pediatric physical therapist. After the funeral, Amanda's mom and stepdad, who basically raised her from the age of four, their names were Gloria and Mike Bates, they flew to Germany and spent a week there talking to Amanda's supervisors and fellow soldiers. Amanda was known for being outspoken and sticking up for others and had gained the nickname Firecracker during her time in the Army. Amanda had a reputation for being a caring soul and sticking up for her friends at school if anyone was being bullied. Her mom, Gloria, referred to her as a mother hen. According to Gloria, quote, if she saw someone being mistreated, she would step in between and just go off, end quote. Initially, CID held four soldiers back from being able to leave Hanau under permanent change of station, or PCS, and they kept them back as part of the investigation. But they eventually allowed these four soldiers to move away. Following her murder, CID offered a reward of $20,000 for any information leading to some sort of resolve for the death of Private First Class Amanda Gonzalez. In August of 2002, the case was transferred to the CID office in Wiesbaden, Germany, hoping that a fresh set of eyes could find a detail that may have been overlooked during the initial investigation. But nothing new came of the change of investigators. By April of 2003, Amanda's family had been waiting 521 days for answers. Her biological father, Santos T.C. Gonzalez, was starting to lose hope that they would ever get answers. Investigators told TC that they were waiting for DNA analysis of skin cells and that they had found a hamburger wrapper that they were able to lift a fingerprint from. But TC's suspicion all along was that the father of Amanda's unborn baby was the person who murdered her. He was worried about others that might be around that unknown soldier. TC felt that if the man killed once, he would do it again. In July of 2003, a year and a half since Amanda's murder, CID announced that they were upping the reward to $50,000. The lead investigator on the case, Special Agent Russell Davidson, told the Stars and Stripes, quote, "Increasing the reward is symbolic of the determination we have in solving this case and bringing the person or persons responsible to justice," end quote. Agent Davidson went on to say, quote, "I'm convinced someone out there knows something that could help us crack this case. We encourage anyone who has any information, no matter how insignificant it may be, to come forward. That information may just be the final piece of the puzzle required to bring the responsible person or persons to justice," end quote. 6 months after this, no new leads had come from the announcement of the increased cash reward. Amanda's dad, TC Gonzalez, told Stars and Stripes that CID agents were calling him to provide updates. But TC was often disheartened when they called because he said 2 years went by and I'm hearing the same thing over and over again. You get to the point of saying to the Army, why call me? Why ruin my day? As of November 2003, which was the date in the Stars and Stripes article, CID had conducted 400 interviews. They had collected 375 pieces of evidence and conducted more than 100 searches and crime scene examinations. CID also stated that they had a special agent assigned full-time to the case for over a year and that they had also received some help from the FBI. Amanda's best friend, Shauna Steele, described to Stars and Stripes how she remembered Amanda in her daily life, even though she had been dead for many years. Like that one time that Shauna pulled out an outfit that she happened to have bought when she was with Amanda in Germany. And then there was that one time that she saw a Dodge Neon on Law & Order being driven by a pregnant woman, and Shauna knew it wasn't her friend Amanda, but she could have sworn it was Amanda on TV. Shauna felt the CID wasn't doing enough. She told Stars and Stripes, quote, "I'm really mad at CID. I feel like they don't even care. All the cases that go on for years, do they just forget about them and say we're going to leave this on the back shelf?" End quote. But you see, CID was still doggedly investigating the case. Amanda's old unit deployed to Baghdad in 2003, but CID agents were able to conduct interviews worldwide and they continued to look into leads as the years went by. A CID spokesperson told Stars and Stripes that, quote, "There are no statutes of limitation for murder. We intend to exhaust every lead, follow up on every clue, and use all means at our disposal to solve the crime," end quote. In November of 2008, 5 years after the Army had increased the reward to $50,000, Amanda's mother, Gloria Bates, had not lost hope that her daughter's killer would be found. Things had changed back at Hanau, though. The base closed its gates in 2007 and returned the installation to the German government. The Army was deeply involved in two wars, and as a result, CID was stretched thin. Despite the limitations, they continued to call Amanda's family once a month to provide an update on the case and to let them know if they had made any progress. CID had suspects for many years, but they were still waiting on DNA. TC, Amanda's father, expressed his frustration to Stars and Stripes, saying, quote, "It's frustrating as hell that was my daughter, my only daughter. It still hurts. It's been 7 years," end quote. TC went on to say, quote, "I know she had been in a struggle. I want some answers and maybe get a little closure," end quote. The thing about this, and this is what I've personally learned by listening to Amanda's family do interviews over the years, is that Amanda's family didn't know she was pregnant at the time of her death. In fact, Amanda was going on leave for Christmas, and that's when she planned to break the news to her family. So as you can imagine, finding out that their daughter was murdered, on top of that she was 4.5 months pregnant when she was murdered, was very difficult for Amanda's family. Despite all the years that had gone by without an answer, Amanda's mother, Gloria, had faith. She told the paper that she was confident that there would be justice for Amanda one day, and she was determined that rage would not get the best result for her daughter, and even said that she found in her heart to forgive whoever it was that was responsible for the death of her daughter and first grandchild. A month after Amanda's parents' interview with Stars and Stripes in December of 2008, CID increased the reward from $50,000 to $100,000. The reward would be paid out to anyone with information leading to the apprehension and conviction of the persons responsible for the 2001 death of U.S. Army Private First Class Amanda Gonzalez in Hanau, Germany. Quote, increasing the reward to $100,000 is a testament to the determination we have in solving this case and bringing the person or persons responsible to justice. The CID spokesperson Chris Gray continued, quote, we are confident that someone out there knows something about the untimely death of this soldier and her unborn child, and we are not giving up. We strongly encourage anyone with information to contact us immediately, end quote. Amanda's dad, TC, told Stars and Stripes how his frustration never went away. He said, quote, at the time of her death, Amanda was pregnant and looking forward to sharing her life and love with her daughter. It was in this same article that Mom Gloria said that she had forgiven the killer, not even knowing who he was. But still, the family craved answers. They craved closure. 3 years later, the reward was increased again, this time to a whopping $125,000 in October of 2011. But the years still, they ticked on and on and on, with little information and seemingly little movement on Amanda's case. In 2014, CID requested help from the FBI, which evolved into the FBI basically taking over the case from the Army that same year. According to the lead FBI agent on the case, Special Agent Donato, nothing necessarily precipitated CID transferring the case to the FBI, other than the fact that it was a very, very cold case. Despite the renewed energy from the FBI taking the case in 2014, another 6 years dragged by before there was anything significant in the news concerning Amanda's case. But then in April of 2020, the Army was thrust into the spotlight about the murder of another active duty female soldier, and it was following the murder of Vanessa Guillen at Fort Hood. You see, Amanda's cousin Stephanie Jackson had been using social media to try to get some traction on Amanda's case, and when Vanessa Guillen was murdered, it sadly gave them some momentum. So Stephanie posted to Facebook in July of 2020. And this is what her Facebook post said. Quote, I am so happy that hashtag justice for Vanessa is there on the horizon. Everything that I've seen has brought me to something familiar for my family. The FBI and my family are seeking information regarding the 2001 murder of U.S. Army soldier Private First Class Amanda Gonzalez in Hanau, Germany. Gonzalez, 19, was 4 months pregnant at the time of her murder. Since November 5th, 2001, Amanda's parents have tried to find any information regarding who killed their daughter in her barracks, almost 2 months after 9/11. At first, the military contacted her parents thinking that Amanda went AWOL. But on Tuesday, November 9th, 2001, another female soldier was able to get into Amanda's barracks to find the body of my cousin. Side note, she was actually found on Monday, November 5th, but I'll continue. All of her belongings were still present in her room. Her car was still there, and the only thing missing was her keys. Fast forward to almost 20 years later, and 7 CID agents later, we still do not know what happened to my cousin on that fateful night. One of the most disturbing things about this cold case is that the military will not release any information in regards to the information they found when it comes to DNA and possible suspects in this case. What did they find? Who's responsible? My family deserves closure. Hashtag justice for Amanda. Hashtag justice for Vanessa. Hashtag justice for women in the military. End quote. Amanda's parents, TC Gonzalez, Gloria Bates, and Amanda's stepfather, Mike, they spoke to KBTX in July of 2020. Amanda's father told them, quote, I hope they find who did this before I pass away. I'm heartbroken. I have a million questions that nobody can answer, and it feels like a cover-up. Her death was put on the back burner, and they won't release any information. I've tried. They won't tell me anything, end quote. Gloria, Amanda's mom, stated, quote, things are happening in the military, and they're allowing a code of silence to cover it up, and they're not telling us parents anything because they're keeping to themselves, end quote. Gloria lamented about how Amanda's case was very similar to Vanessa's case, and that hearing about Vanessa's murder in the news ripped open the old wound that had never fully healed. Gloria added, "When I saw the news that Vanessa was murdered, I thought, oh my God, this is my daughter all over again," end quote. The Gonzalez and Bates family joined forces with the families of other soldiers who had been murdered while serving. They were demanding more transparency from the military, and they were demanding changes to the way those cases were handled. The Gonzalez and Bates family fully backed the hashtag I Am Vanessa Guillen bill, which was passed and became the I Am Vanessa Guillen Act as part of the National Defense Authorization Act, signed into law by President Biden in December of 2021. The new law criminalizes sexual harassment within the Uniform Code of Military Justice, aka the UCMJ. It also changed the way sexual harassment and/or sexual assault investigations are handled in the military. It further removes a service member's chain of command from the investigatory process and moved prosecutorial decision-making to a special prosecutor. The law also established annual reporting to Congress, providing greater oversight and offers protection for service members against retaliation. Sadly, Amanda's father wouldn't live long enough to see the law enacted, because Santos T.C. Gonzalez passed away at the age of 59 on March 20th, 2021. Two more agonizing years would go by before Amanda's case got some real movement. On February 23rd, 2023, the news exploded with the announcement that there had been a, no kidding, arrest in Amanda's case. The FBI released a statement that a former soldier, 42-year-old Shannon L. Wilkerson, who is a man, by the way, was arrested in Florida and charged with one count of first-degree murder. The FBI's Jacksonville Field Office, the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, and CID assisted with the arrest. If you remember, when the initial investigation started, CID had found a notebook in Amanda's room that had two different baby daddy last names next to them, Wilkerson and Johnson. Well, soon after the press release from the FBI, reporters picked up the story, and it was soon being broadcast on all major news outlets like Good Morning America. And by the way, the man who was arrested was Shannon Wilkerson. Gloria and Mike Bates gave interviews after Wilkerson's arrest was announced, and Gloria fought back tears, describing when she received the call from the FBI after 21 agonizing years. She said, quote, "It's a sense of relief. I feel like we bought a roller coaster ticket and we're waiting for this ride to show up. And the ride showed up and they're like, get in, it's time to go. And now we're going and we're holding on," end quote. Mike Bates stated, quote, "Last 24 hours have been an emotional roller coaster. It's a relief," end quote. Gloria said, quote, "That knock on the door happens, yeah, and it's a parent's worst nightmare," end quote. Mike was the one who finished her sentence for her. Gloria went on to say that she would get a weekly call with no updates. The same call over and over again. It was basically like a recording. But every time they'd visit Amanda's gravesite, Gloria would tell her daughter that she wasn't giving up. Just 6 days before Wilkerson's arrest, Gloria visited Amanda and said, "I'm still here and I'm going to still be here to finish this for you." So you're probably wondering, who the hell is Shannon L. Wilkerson? Shannon L. Wilkerson was enlisted in the Army and stationed at Hanau at the time of Amanda's murder. He was discharged from active duty in 2004 and then from the Army Reserves in 2007. News reports and court documents state that the characterization of his discharge was honorable. Wilkerson was charged under the Military Extraterritorial Jurisdiction Act, which gives the U.S. federal courts jurisdiction over crimes committed outside of the U.S. by, among others, former members of the armed forces who are no longer subject to the UCMJ. After being charged with first-degree murder, Wilkerson entered a plea of not guilty. The Military Extraterritorial Jurisdiction Act provides special maritime and territorial jurisdiction for crimes committed outside of the United States. There are stipulations, of course, to this law, so it can be applied in the following circumstances. If the offender was employed by the armed forces outside the United States at the time of the crime, If the offender was accompanying the armed forces outside of the United States at the time of the crime, or if the offender was a member of the armed forces, then they can be prosecuted by the federal government. Wilkerson definitely fit that bill. The indictment read that Wilkerson did, quote, with malice aforethought and with premeditation, did kill unlawfully Amanda Gonzalez, a human being, end quote. All right, so you're probably wondering, what is going on? How come this took so long? How did they make the connection with Wilkerson? So let me take you back to November of 2001, and let's talk about what went on the night Amanda was last seen alive. This information was taken from a U.S. District Court detention hearing document dated March 3rd, 2023. I also have updated it with some additional trial brief information that I got from March of 2024. The detention hearing back in early 2023 was held to determine if Wilkerson should be detained or whether he should be allowed to be set free before the criminal trial took place. Shannon Wilkerson was, of course, stationed in Hanau at the time of Amanda's murder in 2001. At the time, he was married to another active duty soldier identified in court documents as AM, but let's call her Amy for simplicity purposes. Amy was a sergeant in the Army. Wilkerson and his wife, Amy, they didn't live together in the married barracks. I'm not even sure if they had married barracks at the time. But Amy actually lived right next door to Amanda in building 1326. And this was one of the single soldier barracks. Wilkerson lived in building 1323, which was also bachelor barracks. We know that Amanda suspected Wilkerson of being one of the two men who could be the father of her unborn baby at the time. And not to shock you even more, but Amy, Wilkerson's wife, was also pregnant at the time. So no kidding, Wilkerson was married to Amy, she was pregnant, and then he was also having an affair with Amanda, and Amanda was pregnant and wasn't sure if Wilkerson was the baby's father. Hopefully you're tracking. Oh, and if you missed it, Amanda and Amy were next door neighbors. Okay, so this is what prosecutors believe happened when Amanda was murdered. On the night of November 2nd, 2001, Wilkerson had come and gone from SH, aka Sean's, open door barracks room party a few times. But when he came back at around midnight, he was all hyped up and he was trying to get everyone to take shots with him. When no one would take Wilkerson up on his offer, he left and went to his own barracks, building 1323, and then he hit up a buddy, Cece. Cece and Wilkerson hung out in Cece's room for about an hour before heading to the International Club on Post around 1 a.m. The International Club, or iClub for short, was like the NCO club. It had a bar, they had music, they had dancing. So the iClub closed at 2 a.m. So when they got there around 1 a.m., they didn't have a lot of time to kind of hang out. So eventually, they left. Wilkerson wanted to keep partying, and he wanted to go off post to party at a club called the Millennium Club. But Cece was like, no, I gotta work tomorrow. I cannot stay out that late. I wanna go to bed. So the two guys stopped at an ATM so that Wilkerson could get some cash. He took out $20 out of his ATM card because he wanted to go off post. Cece was trying to be a good battle buddy, so he took the money from Wilkerson so that he couldn't go to the off-base club. Cece thought his buddy was way too wasted already and didn't need to be leaving the base. Wilkerson, though, didn't care, and instead he went back to the ATM, pulled out another 20 bucks. So at that point, CC just gave up. He gave Wilkerson his other $20 bill, and he called it a night. CC also loaned Wilkerson a gray sweatshirt because it was getting cold outside, and Wilkerson was only wearing shorts and a t-shirt because, remember, they were having a barracks party, so they were just running from one room to the next. He didn't really need a whole bunch of clothes, which, by the way, there's a weather report that says that it was like in the 40s that night. This sweatshirt does become really important later in the story, which is why I wanted to let you know about Wilkerson borrowing this sweatshirt. So at the time that Cece and Wilkerson split ways, it seemed like Cece was heading back to his barracks room and Wilkerson was walking towards the front gate. However, once Wilkerson got to the front gate, the military police that were guarding the gate, they refused to allow Wilkerson to leave because he was too intoxicated. So Wilkerson turned around and left the gate at around 2:15 a.m. The next time he was seen was around 3:15 a.m. So there's a whole hour where Wilkerson's time is unaccounted for. Anyway, the next time that Wilkerson was seen again was at around 3:15 a.m. when he popped into another barracks room party. The party was being hosted by a soldier whose initials are RS, so we're going to call him Randy. That's a pseudonym. And then there was another soldier there named EV. We'll just call him Evan. So the party is in Randy's room and Evan was hanging out there when all of a sudden Wilkerson shows up. So at that point, Wilkerson asked Evan to lie for him. He said, listen, if my wife Amy asks you what I did, I want you to tell her that I was here at this party drinking with you guys all night long. Evan thought, okay, that's weird because we're not really friends. And it was odd that he'd make that kind of request to him. But, you know, he probably was like, okay, sure, whatever. Wilkerson, at the time that he got to the party, was still wearing Cece's gray sweatshirt when he got to Randy's room. But he took it off at some point and left it behind when he ducked out about 20 minutes after getting there. So just to give you more of a timeline, Wilkerson was turned around at the gate at 2:15 a.m. He showed up at the party at 3:15 a.m. and then he maybe had a beer and left by 3:30, 3:35 a.m. The next time anybody has an encounter with Wilkerson is at around 4 a.m. when he went into another soldier's room who was there with his girlfriend watching TV. Wilkerson went into that soldier's barracks room and asked if he could hang out. Then he put his arm on his head and told the people there, quote, I f***ed up, end quote. So that's basically all we have about that night, you know, from November 2nd into early November 3rd, 2001. So listen, so while CID was investigating, they went back a couple of weeks and CID learned that Wilkerson was in Sean's room when Amanda came in one day to use the popcorn machine. Sean was a soldier who was having the big barracks party on the Friday night, November 2nd, 2001. Well, Sean told CID that while Amanda was in his room using the popcorn machine, that she basically ignored Wilkerson. When she left, Wilkerson piped up that he hated Amanda. Wilkerson confessed to Sean that Amanda was pregnant with his baby and that it was causing issues between him and his wife, Amy. Duh, you think? Wilkerson then asked Sean to help him mediate the problems that he had between himself and his wife. Another witness told CID that 2 weeks before Amanda's murder, Wilkerson told him that if Amanda told anyone that the baby was his, that he would kill her. He emphasized this by saying, quote, I promise, end quote, which is funny because he's the one going around telling people that Amanda's pregnant with his baby, but whatever. This witness also said that Wilkerson told him that Amanda had threatened to tell command staff about hers and Wilkerson's relationship and that he feared that could impede his promotion chances. The gap in time where Wilkerson's whereabouts were unknown were between 2:15 and 3:15 a.m. on November 3rd. That, combined with the threats he verbalized to his friends, had put Wilkerson squarely in the sights of CID early in the investigation. As CID was collecting evidence, they collected Cece's gray sweatshirt from Randy's room a few days after Amanda's murder. DNA testing was conducted on the sweatshirt, but in 2001, the samples taken were too small, given the technology at the time, to give any, like, knowledgeable information. So they were unable to get anything but an inconclusive result for the DNA collected from the sweatshirt when compared to Wilkerson and Amanda. So that was back in 2001, technology from 2001. And as we know, DNA testing has gotten incredibly sensitive over the years. So now even small samples can produce precise results. Well, in 2021, the FBI retested the sweatshirt and determined that the DNA recovered from the sleeve showed a mixture of DNA belonging to Cece, who loaned Wilkerson the sweatshirt, Wilkerson, and Amanda. Amanda's DNA was found specifically on one of the sleeves. The DNA was found to be 350 billion times more likely to belong to the three of them. FBI agent Donato testified about the technology used in 2021 being different than what was available in 2001 and 2014 when the FBI took over the case. Now, he also said that the testing was prompted because the FBI realized that Cece's DNA had never been collected. The type of DNA found on the sweatshirt was not identified in the court documents, but I'm sure we'll learn about it at trial. So it's not known right now, at the time of this recording, whether it was blood, skin, hair, or what. Testimony showed that Wilkerson's DNA was present on Amanda's sheets, but that really wasn't damning evidence considering that they were known to have a sexual relationship prior to her death. But it should be noted that Wilkerson's DNA was not present on Amanda's body, the t-shirt and bra she had on, or on the BDU pants that were wrapped around her neck. During this detention hearing in early 2023, Wilkerson's character was put through the wringer. They described him as a 42-year-old man who was born in Andalusia, Alabama, and who co-owned a home there with two brothers. It talked about how Wilkerson lived in Andalusia, Brighton, where his mother lives, or Crestview, the majority of his life. Wilkerson spent 5 years in the Army from 1999 to 2004 when he was honorably discharged. He remained married to Amy for 9 years until they divorced around 2011. Wilkerson had two children with Amy, a son who was 14 and a daughter who was 21 at the time of the detention trial in 2023, so they're about a year older now. Testimony was given that Wilkerson was close with his children despite them living in North Carolina with their mother. Wilkerson is also a source of emotional and financial support for his kids. He speaks to them regularly and spends time with his son on holidays, and his son was expected to come stay with him during the summer of 2023. Wilkerson's 21-year-old daughter at the time was also pregnant at the time of Wilkerson's arrest. So it was brought up at a point to show his ties to the community and basically to say, like, hey, listen, he's not a flight risk. His first grandchild is about to be born. Other community ties included involvement with his church and coaching youth sports. 45 letters of support were submitted from various people Wilkerson was connected to. They ranged from coworkers and people he met through church to kids and parents from youth sport programs to friends who had come to know him for years. They all submitted their letters showing what a great guy he was. Wilkerson's brothers and around 40 other family members and friends came in person to show their support during the hearing as well. Not everything that was talked about was all rosy, though. Wilkerson has slash had a 3-year-old child at the time of the detention hearing that he does not have any contact with. Some negative testimony included the fact that Wilkerson was charged with first-degree domestic violence against Amy in 2004, but that case was dismissed in 2005. Of note, the charge included an allegation that Wilkerson tried to choke his wife. He was also found guilty of public intoxication and resisting arrest in 2004 as a result of an altercation between him and one of his brothers. Police officers had to use chemical agents to control the brothers, which I assume means they sprayed them with mace. At the time of this fight, Wilkerson's blood alcohol content was 0.23. For comparison, most states will charge someone with a DUI when their BAC is 0.08. So, needless to say, Wilkerson must have been hammered when he was fighting with his brother. Wilkerson was found guilty of public intoxication in 2005 and received a traffic citation for having an open container in 2016. While the prosecution used these incidents to show that Wilkerson was violent when he drank, defense countered with information that Wilkerson voluntarily entered a 3-day inpatient program at the Veterans Affairs Hospital, also known as the VA, and he entered that treatment program for alcohol. Of note, he was also diagnosed with PTSD and alcoholism by the VA. Wilkerson had been working on Eglin Air Force Base in Florida in 2018 as an equipment operator, but he was arrested and placed on suspension as a result of the indictment. Because of that indictment, there are no details about what he was arrested for at the time, but Wilkerson would not be allowed to return to his job upon release from jail. However, defense provided a declaration from the owners of a company who said that they would provide Wilkerson with a job if he was released. All in all, both sides argued their points before leaving it in the hands of the judge. After weighing all the information, the decision was announced. Shannon L. Wilkerson would be released, but with stipulations. He would be released to his cousin, but had to be on in-home detention with GPS monitoring. His cousin told the court that he owned a gun, so another stipulation was that the gun had to be removed from the home before Wilkerson would be allowed to move in there. Wilkerson was also forbidden from drinking alcohol, and he would be subject to random drug testing. The judge decided that with all the evidence presented, Wilkerson was deemed to not be a flight risk and signed the order of release on March 6, 2023. Late in 2023, I went back to check how the case was progressing, and I found that the trial is currently, as of this recording, scheduled to begin on April 8, 2024 in Pensacola, Florida, and it is set to last 8 days. Some of the things that will come out at the trial include testimony that Wilkerson made a drastic change after Amanda's murder. His former friends are expected to testify that prior to Amanda's murder, Wilkerson was a party animal, a heavy drinker, and had multiple affairs on his wife right under her nose. Immediately after Amanda's murder, witnesses will testify that Wilkerson became a, quote, overnight Christian, end quote, attending weekly church, and that he partied less. Over the years, Wilkerson was interviewed multiple times, 3 times in 2001, twice in 2002, 1 time in 2012, and 1 time in 2023. But the prosecution is not interested in introducing any of his statements because they claim that they were either self-preserving and contradicting. They are going to hang their hats on the DNA and witness testimony. And if you're wondering about the other possible baby daddy in this case, as I have over the years, well, it turned out that he, let's call him Mike, he was also in the Army, but he was close to 200 miles away from Amanda's barracks room the weekend that she was murdered. He was conducting an exercise with his unit in Graffenveer. And sadly, DNA on Amanda's unborn baby would reveal that Wilkerson wasn't the baby's father anyway. Mike was determined by DNA to be the unborn baby's father. At the time of his arrest, Shannon Wilkerson was heavily involved in his community through church events and even served as a coach for youth sports, including baseball and basketball. His community was completely shocked by the charges. Wilkerson was charged with first-degree murder, but when the case in chief closes, the jury will also be instructed on the lesser-included offenses of second-degree murder and voluntary manslaughter. So let's hope and pray that there is justice for Amanda Gonzalez and her unborn baby. Thank you to everyone who has remembered Amanda throughout the years. I know she was very much loved and thought about because of the messages that I have received from y'all. She is in my thoughts and prayers as her case is presented in court. And I will be sure to keep you guys updated, so make sure that you're following me at least on Instagram at Military Murder Podcast. And listen up, if you're interested in supporting the show, make sure you check out my Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/militarymurder, and there you can get access to at minimum 40 bonus episodes. So if you're caught up with all 160 plus episodes that are out on the public feed, make sure you check out patreon.com/militarymurder. Shout out to Myrtle for researching and writing today's episode. My sources for this episode include U.S. District Court Northern District of Florida court filings, and articles found in Bryan College Station Eagle, Stars and Stripes, Defense.gov, KTBX3, 5NBC DFW, Eyewitness News 7, ABC News, Law and Crime, Facebook, People, the DOJ website, Find a Grave, and Legacy.com. This show was created by Mama Margot Productions. Executive producers for this episode include Falcon 13, Myrtle, and Jen. The music was created by Tyops. Until next time, remember, you never really know what someone is capable of, so remain vigilant always. You have a fabulous week, and I'll keep digging to bring you another military murder story next week.
Mama's working on her podcast.
I don't want to.